Hello, I'm Lisa Mullins, and this is a special podcast of The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH in Boston. The scope of the tragedy in the Democratic Republic of Congo defies comprehension. A war in the African country killed 4 million people between 1998 and 2003, and fighting has continued among government forces, insurgents, militias, and Rwandan Hutu rebels. One of the most gruesome features of the conflicts is the widespread use of rape as a weapon. Armed groups use it to terrorize communities and control territories. Tens of thousands of women and girls have been attacked. The World's Jeb Sharp reports from Bukavu in Congo's South Kivu province. And this caution, Jeb's report contains some disturbing descriptions of rapes.
The landscape here is so beautiful, it's hard to believe the suffering it contains. The city of Bukavu sits at the southern tip of Lake Kivu. The lake is surrounded by mountains and often bathed in a soft blue light that gives everything a dreamlike quality. But a few minutes from the lakeside, it's a different story. The chaotic, muddy streets of a hardscrabble town battered by war. My destination, Panzi Hospital, is on the outskirts. Dr. Dennis Mukwege directs the hospital. He's a big, warm man. He grew up here, left to study medicine in France, and returned to practice gynecology. He never imagined the brutality of what he would be dealing with.
It's horrible. It's horrible to see what's happening to the women here. Most of these women are completely destroyed by it.
About 10 women a day are admitted to Panzi Hospital. Most are victims of rape. Often brutal gang rape, rape that is often followed by mutilating attacks on women's genitals. About a third of the women who reach Panzi have injuries so severe they require surgery, often to patch up holes called fistulas that leave them incontinent. Dr. Mukwege says the atrocities he's been witnessing for years now are not the result of, for lack of a better term, ordinary rape.
When you talk about rape in New York or Paris, everyone can always say, yes, we have rape here too. But it's not the same thing when a woman is raped by 4 or 5 people at the same time. When a woman is raped in front of her husband and children. When a woman is not just raped, but then, after the rape, her genitals are attacked with a gun, a stick, or a bayonet. That's not what you see in New York. That's not what you see in Paris.
The most brutal rapes are blamed on the Hutu militias who fled Rwanda after the 1994 genocide. But human rights groups say virtually all the armed groups here, and there are many, have employed the tactic. Dr. Mukwege says there's no chance of stopping the sexual violence until the fighting ends. The doctors' efforts to get the word out have put Panzi Hospital on the map. Last year, the playwright and activist Eve Ensler profiled Mukwege for Glamour magazine, praising him as an inspirational advocate for the women of Congo. Mukwege says these attacks against women put the whole society at risk.
La femme, c'est l'humanité. La femme, c'est la vie.
Women are humanity. Women are life. Women are procreation. A society with a few men and lots of women is a society with a future. But a society where all the women have been destroyed is a society that's going to disappear.
Dr. Mukwege sees himself as a father figure to his patients, someone they can trust and feel safe with. He says they desperately need that. On this morning, a 10-year-old girl tags along behind him, clutching a doll. She calls him Papa. When she sees my camera, she begs me to take a picture. I do, but the doctor says you mustn't use it. It could destroy her life. What he means is that the world outside the hospital gates can't know she's a rape victim if she's to have any hope of a normal life here in Congo. As we sit together, I realize the child is incontinent. There's urine running down her leg. Mukwege has work to do, so he hands me off to a translator, Rita Baraka. She gives me a tour.
So this is the fistula ward, only fistula for fistula patients.
We walk through the ward and out the other side of the building. There's a big covered shelter out there where hundreds of women are gathered.
Yeah, this is the place to eat, the place sometimes to play, and sometimes here they are making some activities, for example, sewing activities, help them to forget maybe. While waiting, they can forget their trouble.
The women are waiting for surgery, waiting for food, waiting for housing, waiting for help. Some of them look numb. They sit and stare into space. There are dozens of children here, too. Rita Baraka introduces me to some of them. It doesn't feel right to interview young girls about rape, but the hospital staff wants me to understand what's been happening here. I speak with a tiny 10-year-old in blue jeans named Marie.
I've been raped by Hutu soldier who came in my house. They first of all killed my parents and then they raped me. There were three.
When you listen to the stories here, you get a sense of how little security people have, how suddenly and randomly an attack can rip through their lives. Another patient, also called Marie, is 23. One day in October, she left her two young children at home and called a ride to market. The car was ambushed by armed men. She and six other women were taken into the bush.
So they took off all our dresses and we remained naked. They killed one woman among us. Kisha wakatukamata sasa tulibakia uchi. Mie mwenye alinilalaka ni mtu moya na akanifanzia mkinyo. Mwingine akanifanzia mkinyo. One man raped me and another one make sex with me, put his sex in my mouth.
Marie managed to escape after 3 days. Eventually, she made her way to Panzi Hospital.
When I arrived here at the hospital, they told me that I don't have AIDS. They told me that I don't have syphilis, but they told me that I'm pregnant. That's why I'm wondering, what will I do with this pregnancy? What will I do? What will happen to me?
Marie has no idea what's happened to her two young boys. Their father had already abandoned her before the attack, and she was living with relatives, but she fears they'll throw her out if she returns. Many rape victims end up fleeing their homes or being chased away. Dr. Mukwege says they come to the city, which is dangerous.
Quand elles quittent le village, elles laissent leurs élevages, leurs bétail, leurs champs.
When they leave their village, they leave their crops, their animals, their fields. All their economic activity collapses. And when they arrive here in town, they have no way of making a living. Many of them are illiterate. So they either accept a passive death or they start to prostitute themselves. Either one means death. Those who turn to prostitution get AIDS and die. Those who don't die of hunger.
Here at Panzi, staff members do what they can to help women avoid that fate. And while they alone can't transform the culture of violence and impunity that reigns in Eastern Congo, they can try to help the victims heal. One way they do that is through dance and music. A social worker leads the women in a church song in Swahili. In Jesus there is peace, the women sing. Whoever has Jesus has peace. Rita Baraka says the singing is therapeutic.
When they sing like this, it helps them to remove fear, anxiety, and concern. So no trouble. This helps them.
For the moment, the music does seem to help. Rita Baraka and Dr. Mukwege often describe these women as destroyed. Yet here they are, singing, swaying, ululating, as if to say we're not, we're here, we're alive. It's a sign of hope in a place where so much more is needed. For the world, I'm Jeb Sharp, Bukavu, Congo.
The Harvard Humanitarian Initiative at Harvard University has a project to support the work at Panzi Hospital. Dr. Julia Van Royen is the principal investigator on the project, and she is a surgeon as well. She's in our studio right now. First, tell us how this crisis of sexual violence in Congo strikes you as a medical professional.
It's appalling. I have not ever heard or read of anything to this degree of involvement in terms of the vast number of women that this affects. I had the opportunity to meet Dr. Mukwege in November of 2006. And when I listened to the stories that he told me, I was unable to go back home and pretend that I had not heard them. And I really felt compelled to try to help him in his work with these women. He is inundated. He does not have enough hours in the day to put a dent in the problem. So he is trying to train more Congolese physicians to assist him. And I felt that that was one area where I could personally help him. Providing this sort of high-level technical expertise by sending physicians on a rotating basis to the hospital for 2 to 3 week stints was one way that I felt that we could assist him in treating this problem.
Tell us what the doctor specifically does in the hospital and how that's different from what others might be doing.
Well, he is a pelvic surgeon. So he tries to reconstruct these women after these horrendous injuries. So many of them have fistulas. And fistulas are an abnormal connection, basically. A vesico-vaginal fistula, which is what most of these women have, is an abnormal connection between the bladder and the vagina. Or a rectovaginal fistula is a connection between the rectum and the vagina. So either or both, some women can have both, can cause women to be incontinent, either of urine or feces.
So there's a hole there where there shouldn't be.
Exactly.
In Jeb Sharp's story that we just heard, she took us to this hospital at Panzi, and I wonder if you can tell us what, in terms of your own view as a physician here in America, what you see the conditions there like. I mean, how well can this doctor and the staff keep up with the need?
Well, it's very difficult. In fact, some of the surgeons that we have sent who've come back have expressed dismay that there's just a never-ending number of women, you know, a never-ending line of women coming through for treatment. The hospital itself is a beautiful place. And yet, when you really go inside the operating rooms, for example, they really lack many of the basic necessities that one would normally find in a hospital. Soap, for example. There's a single old bar of soap that the entire surgical staff has to wash their hands with when they go in for a case. You know, and they need to lock that bar of soap up at night or else it will disappear.
Is it important to you to convey to people here what's going on there?
It is. But I'll tell you, when I've tried, it's almost impossible. The subject matter is so horrific that most people just can't or don't want to hear. It's too upsetting to hear.
It's very upsetting
when you start
to
talking
hear,
about an 11-year-old that's been gang raped for days by, you know, it's been difficult. It's, you know, it's an enormous conversation killer when someone says, "What have you been doing? I've been in Africa. Why were you there?" And, you know, and then you say the kind of work that you were doing is very, it's shocking to people. And it's also difficult because I would never want to take anything away from anyone here who'd suffered a rape. I don't mean to downplay sort of a just anyone who's ever had any kind of sexual assault. But it is something entirely different there. You know, there's no purpose except to utterly terrorize these women. It's really evil.
Dr. Julia Van Rooyen is a specialist in urogynecologic surgery. She directs the Harvard Humanitarian Initiatives Project at Panzi Hospital in eastern Congo, which Jeb Sharp just told us about in the prior story. Dr. Van Rooyen, thanks.
Thank you very much.
The attacks on women in Congo are shocking and incomprehensible, and UN officials say the brutality and the scale of the sexual violence there is unprecedented. There are many organizations trying to help women there recover and rebuild their lives, as Jeb Sharp reports.
Sarah Mosley works for the International Rescue Committee in eastern Congo. She specializes in gender-based violence.
The rape that we're seeing here is brutal. Most of the women are gang raped. Often they are mutilated in the process to the extent that they will not be able to have children again or become incontinent. So the physical wounds incurred by these rapes are severe and life-threatening often.
That's why the IRC and other aid groups focus first and foremost on medical care. But the rape here also causes psychological wounds and societal wounds.
Culturally, you know, women's value is very closely tied to, you know, concepts of purity and chastity. And they already have a fairly low standing in society. So when a woman or a girl is raped, you know, if she's married, often a husband will reject her because she's seen as unclean. or if she's a young girl who's to be engaged or, you know, still in her, you know, preteens, she won't have the opportunity to be engaged because men in the community will, again, reject her.
Those are wounds that surgery and medicine won't heal. So Sarah Mosley also focuses on counseling and family mediation and small-scale economic development, strategies that help women recover what she calls some sense of normal. One effective way to do that is through grassroots women's organizations. Meet the women of Kamanyola, a town near the Rwandan border. As in other communities across eastern Congo, women here were being raped by soldiers and militiamen. So in 2001, some of the women in Kamanyola formed a collective. Josephine Mugoto is the group's treasurer. We started the Kamanyola Women's Collective because of the situation women were facing here during the war, she says. We had a big problem. No one would listen to the women. Sometimes when they had problems with their husbands, when they were chased away from their homes, no one heard them. We joined together to defend the rights of women here. The women worked in secret at first, helping rape survivors to find medical care and trying to help families stay together. But gradually, they grew bolder. We had lots of young women who were abandoned by their families, she says. So we set up a sewing group to keep them busy. Those who weren't able to sew, we taught to knit. Getting women together to knit and sew may not seem like much, but it's remarkably effective. It helps them become productive again after their lives have been shattered. The IRC's Sarah Mosley says that's especially important here in Congo.
Not only are women also valued based on, again, the concept of, you know, chastity and purity, but also on their productivity. And women often voice feeling useless or not needed or without any purpose. After sexual assault, there's a real sense of despair.
The group started literacy classes. It also bought farmland for its members to cultivate. They sell the crops and manage the proceeds. The money helps pay their kids' school fees. It's a testament to the power of this group that it can claim 450 beneficiaries, including Charlotte Siapata.
I am one of the people who was taken and raped. When I came back, my husband refused me in the beginning. But with the intervention of these women, I was able to stay with my husband. Now I'm very happy. At the beginning, whenever I saw people talking, I thought they were talking about me. When I saw someone pass by, I thought maybe they wanted to rape me. So I was full of fear and suspicion. But these women helped restore my morale.
There are other encouraging stories, but it's not all rosy. In Kamanyola, the war has faded, and the fighting is far enough away that the women are no longer in danger from roving armed groups. But the collective's president, Fatuma Kaengeli, says the ways of the war have seeped into the culture itself. Boys who were teenagers before the war and are young adults now grew up seeing people not punished for rape, she says. So they go and get a girl and rape her and know they won't be punished. It's not just men in uniform anymore, it's civilians too. People here often say the sexual violence won't end until the fighting finally does. But if what Kaengeli says is true, it won't end even then. The trauma runs too deep. But here, at least in Kamanyola, the women have a sense they're making some progress, against all the odds. For The World, I'm Jeb Sharp, Kamanyola, Congo.
You can see photos of Panzi Hospital in Bukavu and the women of Kamanyola at our website, theworld.org. You can also find transcripts of Jeb Sharp's stories in our World Features section, as well as links to more information about sexual violence in war zones. That's all at theworld.org. That concludes our podcast. I'm Lisa Mullins. Thanks for listening.